Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, computers. You can't live with them. You can't live without them. And, you know, everything that we do now is some way connected to computers. Well, here to answer all your computer-related questions is Tony Yang. Tony's a great guest. He's been on several times before. Tony started Gig Computers in 1996 while studying computer science at SUNY Albany. His company began as a hobby in college and quickly blossomed into one of the largest PC retailers in the region. Tony has been managing networks for numerous companies and organizations, including this one, ranging from a few computers to many hundreds. Always nice to have you back on the show. Tony Yang, welcome to Vox Pop.
Thank you, Ray. Good to be back.
Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can go to Facebook and comment there. We have a Vox Pop wall post at our Facebook page, WAMC Radio. You could tweet us if you want. Go to tweet at WAMC Radio and then use the hashtag VoxPop. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But by all means, call if you wish, 1-800-348-2551. So at the beginning of the show, at the billboard, I made a little joke about a certain former federal employee from Northern Westchester who worked a very high level of government and set up her own email account and her own server at her house to do government business. And all the political mumbo jumbo that we've been hearing on the round table and all the news networks about this. But let's talk about the technicals here. So Hillary Clinton set up a server at her house. Is that what I'm getting here?
I don't know if it was at her house, but the server belonged to her. She owned the server.
Okay.
So it might be at a data center somewhere, but it wasn't running in Washington, D.C.
Okay. And so what are the potential security? And I have no direct evidence that there was a security breach, but what are the possible security issues if you were in a high level of government and you decide that you're going to run your own email?
Yeah, I mean, one of the basic things that you do, we have worked on Homeland Security email projects where they required all of their vendors or anybody that's associated with projects that are working on to have encrypted email.
Mm-hmm.
When you're running the email server out of your house or out of a data center, there's no guarantee that you have the proper security measures in place. And I would have to imagine that the State Department has as high level of security as you can possibly get.
But you can get encryption for a private server as well, right?
You can. So you can do that on your own. The question is whether or not those were in place at her house or at her network or at a data center somewhere.
I mean, one would assume that if you're as important as she is, that probably she had somebody who knew what they were doing set it up.
I sure hope so. I mean, it was shocking to find out that that was the case.
And a shocking bit of news, at least I saw a quote that said the president did exchange email with her, but he didn't realize that he wasn't sending it to the State Department
That's
account.
Right. Apparently, the president learned of the news at the same time that we all learned of the news. It was pretty shocking. I find that, almost difficult to believe.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you hit reply, it should show up in the box where you're sending it, right?
Right. My guess is that she had somehow arranged it to be a .gov address, so it looks like it's official.
Okay.
But the server isn't running at what they think it's running at.
So in your estimation, someone who has been doing this sort of thing for a long time, is this a big deal?
It is a big deal. I mean, I personally don't think that should be allowed for any government employee.
I don't think it is now, but it was then. But it's shocking that it was then.
Absolutely. I hope that that this would never happen again.
Let's hope the Prez uses the proper email address, eh? So, all right. So here's a question. Before we get to the phones at 1-800-348-2551, here's one that came in via email from our friend Stephen Gottlieb, who is a regular commentator here and a very smart fellow. And you'll get a kick out of this question, Tony. I wonder if Tony can recommend a program that would allow me to run DOS programs from the 80s on Windows. I have a legacy program that is important to my research and need to solve that problem now that the virtual program that was created specifically for me was lost as the result of an upgrade. This is a familiar problem.
Yes, it is. Stephen, hi.
I think he's listening. I told him to listen early.
What I would do in that situation is I would download a what's called a virtualization software. So there's a software called VirtualBox, which is free. It's owned by Oracle, but it's free for you to use. And what you can do with that is you can run another operating system within it. So if you have a Windows 7 PC, for example, you can download VirtualBox and run, let's say, Windows XP or even Windows 95.
Nested in the new server?
Exactly.
I mean, in the new, in a new PC. Operating system? Wow,
right.
Interesting.
Nested in there. And then you can run any of the DOS softwares that you had from the old days. And
you, you don't have to log out of Windows 7 or whatever?
You do not. You can go as far as, you know, I don't know if I should be saying this, but I've seen people running four Mac systems within a Windows 7 OS. So it works very, very well. And that's something that I would certainly recommend you doing. And you can keep that running for as long as you want to use it.
Mm, very good. Okay, so Steve, theoretically, if he understands what was just said, can do this.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. All right, to the phones we go at 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Stuart in Newburgh. Stuart.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is related to removing malware. I guess I downloaded a freeware program, the GIMP photo editor, and I think I must have not checked off. I don't want any of the garbage associated with it. And so it downloaded stuff, and I somehow now have a flood of malware on my computer. And I run, you know, I try to delete it, I run malware bytes, and then the computer crashes, and I can only boot it up in safe mode. And then I had to do a recovery. And I've done this twice, so I'm kind of wondering if there's another way I can get out of the cycle to remove the malware without killing the operating system.
Yeah, hi, Stuart. You have the same problems that a ton of people out there do. There unfortunately is no perfect process to remove adware on your computer once it's there. The softwares that you're using, for example, the malware bytes that you're using, is pretty good. It does a great job, but it's not 100%. I would try using malware bytes, you know, along with your antivirus software, and let's say Norton 360 or Avast. Those are pretty good at removing adware.
Yeah, I use Kaspersky.
Kaspersky is pretty good as well. A combination of different things may take care of that for you, but unfortunately, there is no perfect solution to that. We use, even in our office, we use malware bytes all the time. Sometimes
is there a procedure to go through so that I don't wind up, because it seemed like it killed it, but then I couldn't get into the computer, and then I had to do the safe mode and the recovery.
Right. What I actually will recommend to anybody, any user out there, is that when you get your computer, before you install anything, do a what's called a recovery point. So you can go into your system's icon and control panel and make a recovery point. So in case there's a problem, you can revert it back.
But and stay here just for a moment, Stuart. But isn't that sometimes part of the problem? In other words, if you have something that is embedded way down, don't you need to turn off the restore process before you rid the system of it? Or else you're going to bring it back?
Well, you will want to have that restore point prior to your system getting infected.
Right, so that was my mistake. I didn't do that prior to it. So yeah. When I do the restore, it puts the malware back on.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I said, unfortunately, once adware or a virus gets on your computer, it becomes 10 times more difficult to remove it. Prevention is the best option out there. But once it's infected, you can try using a combination of different things, but there is no perfect solution to that. We have, time after time, we format it and we install Windows because of these things. They get so deep down in the OS level that it's hard to get them out. Now, the other thing you can try, if you don't have any other options, I would get a Windows registry cleaner and see if that helps you out.
Now, would you do that? Should you save your current registry just in case something really goes awry?
Absolutely. Do a restore point. That will take care of that.
Okay.
The restore point, it works very, very well because it actually takes a snapshot of the entire drive. And when you revert it back, it deletes everything from that point going forward. Take a restore point and try registry removal software, and hopefully that will do it for you.
Thanks, Stuart. Tell me about rootkits. Rootkits.
Rootkits. You're talking about the softwares out there that takes a snapshot?
Well, I've seen malware rootkits that get involved, that get deep down, and sometimes the antivirus will catch one and say this rootkit is a it's a bad one.
The unfortunately, the most of the time what ends up happening is the software catches up. It's a catch up game. The virus comes out. The antivirus software catches up days, weeks, sometimes even months afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have we seen viruses out there where there is all of a sudden a date that is going to get activated and nobody knows about it for months and months or years sometimes? So the best thing to do is get your antivirus software updated, keep your OS updated as often as you can, and that is about the best that you can do at this point.
Tony Yang is our guest. We'll take a short break. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. It's Vox Pop. We talk computers. More on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from the Center for Extended Care on University Drive in Amherst, a family-owned and operated nursing center offering rehab, long-term care, and Alzheimer's specialty care, CECAA.com. Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting the Rock the Ridge 50-Mile Challenge for runners, walkers, hikers on May 2nd, sponsored by I Love New York and Ulster County Alive. MohonkPreserve.org for registration. Maybe Farm Historic Site, a historic 18th century farm on the banks of Mohawk River, featuring interactive exhibits, talks, nature trails, and events for children and adults, SchenectadyHistorical.org. And the ADK Market, Keene, New York, country store featuring natural foods, local and specialty products, fresh baked goods, artisanal beer, and everyday groceries, ADKMarket.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Tony Yang is here. We talk computers. Let's go to Hillary in Chappaqua. Hillary, I'm sorry. That's Joanna in South Hadley. Joanna, you're on.
Hi there. I have a very specific question, but I think it has a more generalized context, and that is how to evaluate software. I'm an author with a book. I wanted to put a little shopping cart on my website, and when I tried to look into shopping cart software, I found a lot of free stuff, but I was very leery about the fact that it might not have enough encryption or be safe in terms of people putting their credit cards into this thing. And then the paid ones seem to be for, you know, big enterprises. They cost a lot per month. So how do you evaluate this encryption safety stuff? And the specific question is, do you have a recommendation for a simple shopping cart program?
Hi, Joanne. In fact, yes, I do. What I have been doing lately is referring all of my clients to a website called Wix.com. It's Wix.com. Mm.
Yes, I've heard of that advertised. Yep.
Yes. They charge a very, very minimal amount of money. I think it's about $10 a month, something like that. And you don't have to know any programming at all.
Okay.
They have built-in shopping carts that you can use to interface with companies like PayPal. It's all streamlined for you already. There's nothing really technical for you to do except to kind of put these little pieces together. As far as the encryption is concerned, that's all done in the background for you, so you don't have to worry about whether or not your site is secure.
Okay.
They actually wouldn't allow you to process credit cards without security anyways. So I think that's a place that I would definitely send you to, and take a look at it.
And if I have a website that's already been constructed on a WordPress platform by someone, I could migrate that over?
Yep, you can migrate it over, or you can use it in conjunction with your existing site. When somebody clicks on the purchase button, you can shoot that over and redirect it over to Wix.
Oh, excellent. All right. So the larger context of how do you know what to trust in terms of...
Great question.
Yeah. The what we recommend, if you were to go out there and try to pick merchant yourself, we would recommend you sticking with the larger companies. So Authorize.net, PayPal is a very, very popular platform, because you can send everything to PayPal and they take care of everything else for you in the background. You don't need to know or have to purchase any additional software. I by far recommend PayPal the most to people who want to do transactions online.
Okay.
It's very easy on both ends. Hey, Joanna, thanks.
Stick with the larger companies then.
Yes.
And do your research. I think it's the best plan.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. We'll get back to the phones in a second. 1-800-348-2551. Tony Yang is here. All right. This one's from Luca in Woodstock. Came via email. Okay. So this is an old operating system, not as old as the XP that I got rid of a few months ago. But it says, "Dear Ray and Tony, I'm still running a PC with Vista.
Vista.
For all these years, this computer has been wonderful and graphically elegant, regardless of the comments by Vista haters. And I only hear people who like Vista. But now it's beginning to die. On boot up, it no longer loads audio files and often does not complete the boot, but freezes with a blank screen. Can my existing PC be repaired?" That's from Luca.
I am going to assume that you're referring to repairing the OS itself. I mean, it doesn't sound like the hardware is broken. It sounds more like a software problem. So you can pop in your Vista CD and try to get Vista reloaded, and that works well sometimes.
Okay.
I have nothing against Vista fans out there.
Yeah.
It works for a lot of people. We don't use it on computer networks that we manage because it wasn't really made for networks. It was made mostly for home users.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would try to reinstall Windows Vista on your machine and see if you can get that going. If not, then you can always do a fresh install on it as well.
But, if it's a boot-up issue where it locks, could it be a RAM issue or a hardware-based issue? It's an older computer.
From my experience, the computers don't tend to lock up when you have a hardware problem.
Okay.
What it does is it crashes. You get a blue screen.
Yeah.
So if you have a memory chip problem, for example, if one of the bits on a memory chip is bad, you're going to get a blue screen. It won't just lock up.
Okay.
Computers lock up when and if there is a memory leak somewhere.
Okay.
And that's software related.
All right. And then Luca adds, "A new PC with Windows 7 or 8 is so ugly that I will not purchase one, but will purchase an Apple because of its elegance. However, it's way too expensive." Well, I finally went over to Windows 8.
Yeah.
Not a huge fan. It works well enough, but you say Windows 7 is kind of decent.
Windows 7 has been really stable, and that is the standard desktop to date for all of our clients, including this station here.
I think Windows 8 has been so far extremely stable. I just don't like the interface with the person.
Yeah, the interface is tough because they have that touch screen interface.
Yeah, which I...
And then there's the older style interface. There's no start menu anymore. It's I find it difficult to use. The transition has been tough for me personally and for all of my employees and many of our clients out there. It was really meant to be a transition from a keyboard OS environment to a touch screen environment. But corporate users don't want to use a touchscreen.
Right.
They want to use a keyboard and a mouse.
Well, yeah. And I guess there's a Windows 10 coming. I got an email saying I'll get a free one because I have Windows 8. So.
Yeah. So Windows 9 was in development for a long, long time. They decided not to name it Windows 9. Now it's Windows 10. And Windows 10 has a kind of a version of the older start menu. But
okay.
It's not fully a start menu.
Because I'll be honest with you, I think XP is the best thing they ever did.
XP was a great operating system.
And I was so irritated when they said, "We will no longer support this." I said, "You finally got one right, and now you're not going to." All right, let's go back to the phones. Enough of my rants. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Landon in Milford, Pennsylvania. You're on.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hey.
Hey, just before I start really quick, I just want to say I'm able to hear the callers, and Ray, I can hear you loud as day. I do have a little bit of trouble hearing Mr. Yang. I do apologize. I just want to know that maybe a mic might be not close enough or something.
All right, Zach the engineer, turn him up to 11. All right.
8 to 11.
All right, so go ahead, Landon.
Okay, so, my question is, I was at Best Buy about a year and a half ago, and I was playing around with the computer. I want to say it was an HP or a Toshiba or something, and it was Windows-based, and it had something I want to say it was called Aura, A-U-R-A. And to me, it was a touch-based application that looked like a table. Like you lay the tablet down flat. Now, of course, this was a PC, not a tablet. Lay it down flat, and it had like a little, almost like a UFO spaceship in the middle that you twisted with your fingers. And when you opened it, it had like documents, videos, pictures, basically your libraries, like on Windows 7. And you could literally take an object, throw it out, and it would fly across the screen, bounce off the corners. You can enlarge it just like you would on a tablet, and press a button. Basically, a light table for photographers. And I thought it was the best thing. The most innovative thing I've ever seen in computers. Is that something that we're going to see more of in the future? Because that just makes sense.
Okay. We have an intermittent signal on you, Landon, but I think we got it all. Go ahead, Tony.
Hi, Landon. Can you hear me okay?
All right. Well, we're going to why don't you listen on the radio, Landon, because obviously you're not hearing Tony's feed all that well. Go ahead.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Landon, I'm not real sure what the application is. I'm thinking maybe it's a software layer on top of
It sounds like Aura might be a software.
A user interface layer on top of the OS.
Yeah.
I think you will probably like Windows 10 when it comes out. So take a look at that. It's got similar features to what you're describing. So hang on and take a look at it when it's released.
You know, I got the offer. You could try Windows 10, the beta, for free. And it terrifies me because of all the horror stories. You go back to Windows 95 and you think, oh, gosh, well, shouldn't you wait 6 months to make sure they have all the bugs and security flaws out or 6 years, depending on what the operating system is? Is it wise to just jump in with both feet on these things?
You know, we have different advices for home users versus corporate users. The reason why, for example, this station here runs on Windows 7 mostly is because our standard policy for our corporate clients is that we keep you back one OS version behind.
Yeah.
Because it is the most stable and it usually is the most compatible software OS for your applications that you might want
to run. Right, so third-party applications are designed to, most of them will run on
7, for example, not on 8
yet.
Sometimes.
Okay.
So we keep your version behind. For home users, myself, for example, I get on the newest OS whenever I can.
Okay.
Because I need to learn it. I need to know what the new thing looks like. But I like to just get on it and take a look at it, see what the new features are, and explore new things. It doesn't affect my work. My work computers are always a generation behind.
Interesting philosophy. I got to say that the learning curve when I jumped from XP to Windows 8 was pretty vast.
Oh, yes.
I swore a lot for several days. I'll tell you that. All right, let's go back to the phones. Rosemary in Hyde Park. Rosemary.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about the Hillary email.
Yeah.
Thing. Yesterday on a newscast during All Things Considered, one of the reporters said that this either the account or the server that she was using was used by President Clinton when he was president.
Oh.
That it's the same, it's tied to whatever he used.
Interesting.
But I only heard that one time, so I don't know if it's true or not. I just thought I'd bring it up.
Another possible shocking news.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that breaking news, Rosemary. We appreciate it.
Well, I heard it on NPR. Well,
I guess I should listen more often. Thanks, Rosemary.
Okay.
Fine. Out. 1-800-348-2551. All right. Here's an email. This is from Chapman. Windows 7 has the ability built into it to run a virtual machine of sorts that can emulate Windows 95 or XP. I've used it many times quite successfully with legacy programs. Oh, this goes back to Steve's question.
Steve's question, yeah.
Yeah, it's also important to have a second log on to your machine with administrator access. Makes it much easier to clean out viruses and adware. Well, that's a good point, too.
Yes, it is. Windows 7 is capable. There is a mode on there called, I think it's called the XP compatible mode. It doesn't work 100% of the time. The suggestions that I made earlier with VirtualBox, that's actually running an entire OS, whether it's Windows 95 or Windows XP.
Mm-hmm.
We find that to be much more dependable than using the compatibility mode.
Okay. This one's from Roberta. I do not have a PayPal account. I don't use PayPal, and yet I get emails about updating my PayPal account. I put those emails in my junk folder. Am I junking legitimate emails?
Nope. If you are not using PayPal and you got a PayPal account, that's what's called a phishing email, and you do not want to click on that.
Don't update it, Roberta. Let's go to MK in Pittsfield. MK, you're on.
Oh, hey. Okay. Tony, thank you very much. I'm in a world of hurt right now.
Oh, boy.
Because do you do any work on Macintosh?
We do a good amount of work on a Mac. We're not a Mac shop, but we do work on a Macintosh. And you have a question about Entourage.
I think you'll be able to help me. I hope so, anyway. Okay, I work at home. All my client emails come into Entourage, and this morning it completely folded, database corrupted. I have been working since 8 a.m. this morning, rebuilding it, compacting it, and we're still not up and running. Here's my main question. I now have, you're familiar with the folder, the Office 2008 identities, the identities. They hold the database and the signatures and the...
Yeah.
Are you aware
of
that?
Go ahead, yeah.
Okay, well, now I've got four identities.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know which one I want to keep. Can I throw the older ones away?
Essentially, there are different profiles that's created over time. You can safely remove the older ones, although I would take a backup of it before you do anything like that, just so that you're not risking, you know, losing your data. Now, I know you said you have a database corruption, but are you actually using Entourage with an Exchange server somewhere? Is that what you're doing? Are you just using Entourage for let's say Gmail to interface with Gmail?
No, I'm using it with a server, with the Time Warner cable service. So I'm IMAP.
So it's part three.
Okay, so it's a part three. That's unfortunate, because if you were on, and you know, this may be something you want to think about. If you were on a what's called a hosted Exchange email account, so it's essentially a corporate Exchange email account. When you have a database corruption, well, that doesn't really matter, because the data actually sits on the server. So you can just wipe out everything on your computer and restart over, and it will pull all the data back in from the server. When you're with Time Warner, now they do have, Time Warner does have Exchange, hosted Exchange as well, but it's fairly new on their offering. If you don't have that, then you're going to have to try to recover that database.
A way that you can do it reliably, get that database back, put it back together?
There is a program that comes with the Microsoft Office suite, and it's called Microsoft Database Utility.
Yeah.
I've been doing this since 8 a.m.
Okay.
I have rebuilt it like four times. That's why I have so many identities now, because I keep saving the previous one, and then I go, and so now I'm up to four.
Yeah.
I've compacted one because probably the database has holes in it. I get a lot of large graphic files, so you can understand.
Sure.
I should have done this backup. Go ahead, yell at me.
I would take, you know, take a USB drive, copy the older profile files over to the USB drive, and then delete it in case you have any problems. You can at least try to recover that. I hate to say this, but it almost sounds like you might need some professional help at this point to get the database back.
Ew.
But would a professional be able to do it, though? That's my question for you, Tony.
Ray, we perform miracles.
I see. Okay. All right.
Yes, we have often been able to recover database, if not 100%, close to 100%.
Okay. Well,
and that would be because you would use a third party software or something.
Yes. Yeah. There are pretty, you know, advanced recovery softwares that work specifically on email, you know, we've had good luck with them in the past.
So you've about had it today. 8 hours of this, MK.
I'm pretty tired, but my clients are emailing me. Yikes.
Yeah.
Is there anyone that you know of in the area, or you?
You're in Pittsfield, right?
Pittsfield.
Can you stop over after the show?
Well, there's got to be some people in the Pittsfield area. Pittsfield's
okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'll look into it.
Oh boy, I feel your pain.
You know, if not, give our office a call, and we'll try to help you out.
And we have contact information on the website on our Vox Pop page. It's a frustrating scenario, and we've all been there.
Yeah, it is. It is, unfortunately. So, like I said, my advice to people is to use a hosted Exchange account somewhere. Because then whatever happens to your cell phone, to your laptop, if your drive dies, it doesn't matter. All that stuff sits on a server.
See, now, I find that to be, being a paranoid type, all of that information being out there somewhere else in the cloud or elsewhere from my possession in my physical location, I find that to be a tremendous security concern.
It certainly is a personal preference, yeah.
Okay. And you have no answer for that.
I have no
Mr.
answer
Fancy
for that.
Mr. Fancy Pants has no answer for that. I understand you have a lot of your former college pals listening in today.
I do. I'm a graduate of the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program, and I think my entire class is listening at this point.
Well, I got to tell you, their class, he really knows his stuff, and he's generally a pleasant guest to have, even off mic. Zach, let's take a break here. 1-800-348-2551. Tony Yang is here. More questions, more emails, more tweets. It's all coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from the Capital District YMCA, working to improve the health and well-being of those in need with programs addressing chronic health, nutrition, and more. CDYMCA.org. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Poughkeepsie Farm Project, connecting food, farm, and community. Organically grown CSA shares, now available for the 2015 season, farmproject.org. And Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons, treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties, hvfa.com.
Fox Pop on WAMC. Tony, hold that thought. We're on the air. 1-800-348-2551. Here's an email. This comes from Mark. Good afternoon, Mark says genially. I use public Wi-Fi a lot at restaurants, hotels, coffee shops, and other places. Are there any dangers from doing this? And if so, what are they? That's from Mark.
Are there any dangers? Not knowing specifically what you're referring to.
Well, you pull in a rest stop, free Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. You log in.
Yeah.
What's the danger?
I see. Okay. So if you, let's say, stop by Starbucks.
Right.
They give you Wi-Fi.
Okay.
And it's not encrypted. However, when you, let's say, put up your bank account online,
mm-hmm.
I use TD Bank. So if I go to tdbank.com, from that point on, you're going to see on the top it says HTTPS.
Right.
So from that point on, it's encrypted from your computer all the way to the TD Bank server.
Right.
So the medium that's in between, whether it's Starbucks Wi-Fi or some open network out there, doesn't matter. That traffic is encrypted from point to point, so that whatever is in between,
you
don't have to be concerned
about. That's very heartening to know, because you go to a hotel, mm-hmm. you go to a casino, you check in, you get the free Wi-Fi, and you wonder,
is it secure?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people worry about that. So you do not need to worry about that because the encryption layer is built from device to device. It, what's in between, the medium that's in between, does not matter.
Theoretically, if it was an NSA operative, he could decrypt it either way.
Unfortunately, I will have to say yes to that.
All right, sir. All right, this is from Monica. Have the woman who called about data recovery on here, Mac, call. Oh, well, this is an ad. I'm sorry, I can't do the ad. But just suffice to say, MK, if you're still listening, there are places in Pittsfield, and we can't do the advertising. This is from Patrick. I believe there's a place on North... Oh, gosh, another one. All right, well, there's a place on North Street in Pittsfield. All right, fine. And this is... Oh, boy. This is from Bonnie. Not an advertisement. Three-part question. One, can data from 90s zip disks be fully retrieved? Two, would today's Corel Illustrator read data from its much older version? Three, if no to either two or three, is there no way to rescue those files?
Huh, okay.
Do you want me to recap any of that?
That's one by one. So the first one.
Can data from 90s zip disks be fully retrieved?
Yes. I believe, if I remember this correctly, zip disks. They were either parallel port based or... I think the later ones were USB 1 based. You can plug that into a parallel port, which actually a lot of computers don't have. So you need an older computer that has that interface.
Yeah.
Plug it in, and you'll be able to read the data off it. I don't see a reason why you couldn't do that.
Okay.
But you may need Windows XP, for example, and not Windows 7.
I think I might still have a zip disk.
That's right. Ray's got the tools that you need.
Still working, too. All right, this one is from, the same question, same person. Question two from Bonnie. Would today's Corel Illustrator read data from its much older version?
That depends. Most softwares are compatible backwards to a certain point. So if you're behind, let's say, 10, 15 years, you may be out of luck, but I will certainly give it a shot. You can, for example, open up Word files from Word 95 in Office 2012 these days. Office 2010. So it depends on the software. I think you have a good chance of opening it up.
Can you just install an old version of Illustrator and get what you need?
If you got the right OS, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. All right, let's go back to the phones. Tony Yang is our guest. Theo and Saugerties. Theo, you're on.
Good afternoon, Paulus, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question to you, and it's very important to me. I do all my banking through the internet from my desktop. I have four computers that are all connected, and I have a router with the passwords and all. And I was wondering, the consist is the antivirus that I'm using. I was wondering, how can I get possibly, or like a way that it would be very little of change, anybody hacking into my bank accounts? What really can I do as far as running my computers, or close them, or open them, or any antivirus, or what exactly, if possible, that I can do as close to bulletproof as I can?
Okay.
Hi, Theo.
Hi.
There isn't 100% proof way of doing it, but I think if you follow the basic advices on how to protect your computer, you can get pretty close to that. You know, the fact is, bank accounts do not get compromised very often at all. When you get onto your computer, for example, for the last caller that called in about the encryption on a Wi-Fi system, this is kind of the same thing. When you're on a wired network, you're encrypted from point to point as well. Anything in between cannot be compromised. So the way that that these hackers have been doing this is they will put a key logger on your computer, for example, where
right.
It logs all the keys that you typed in. So now the way to prevent that from happening is, number one, do not click on any email or links within an email that you are not 100% sure is legit. So, for example, the iOS will never send you an email for you to log on to anything. They don't send notifications out through email.
The IRS will not do that.
Yeah, they won't do that.
Good to know.
And most banks will not send any sensitive information out through an email. They do it by mail. I think it takes lots of common sense, update your antivirus software. Keep your OS updated. If you follow those few things, I think it will keep you mostly safe.
Okay, that's good. Theo, thanks a lot for the question. We appreciate it. How often should the paranoid computer user be scanning, doing full virus scans on the computer?
I think for most people, once a month is
really
good.
Not once a day?
No.
Oh, okay.
Once a day. That's being very, very paranoid.
Note to self.
But then again, you can set up the schedule to scan at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
If you feel the need to do it, go ahead, by all means.
Yeah, so some people I know, a friend of mine has the need to do it very often. So, great question. You just said 2 a.m., set it for 2 a.m. As your personal preference, do you leave your computer on all the time? Power supply-wise, is that a good thing to do or not a good thing to do?
Yeah, I leave my computer on all the time because I sometimes get into my computer remotely when I'm traveling.
Right.
For the average home user, I would say, you don't necessarily have to turn it off, but definitely enable the sleep mode on there. Because when the computer is sleeping, it's not fully off, but it uses a very, very minimal amount of energy, so it doesn't really, it's not going to cause
you
anything.
Does that save your power supply? The turning on and turning off, is that more of a jar to the power supply than just leaving it on all the time?
I think so.
Yeah. That's what I always thought, too.
Right. So, you know, that's one of the other reasons why I keep my computer on all the time. Shutting it off, turning it back on. First of all, it takes a long time to load Windows.
Yeah. My new machine, Tony.
Not on your new machine.
Very quick.
That's
very
right.
Quick.
Ray's got a brand new machine. Congratulations,
thank
by
you.
The way.
Well, it's only been 11 years.
But yeah, I leave mine on all the time, and you know, I recommend people not turning it off, but put it on sleep mode.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go back to the phones. Mary Jane in Glenmont. Hiya, Mary Jane. You're on.
Hi, thank you. I have an Apple Mac Pro laptop that I bought in 2011, and at the same time, I got an HP printer. And the two worked fine wirelessly until a few months ago, and then all of a sudden, I couldn't print anything wirelessly. And I had someone who, a relative who knows about Macs, look at it. He couldn't figure it out, but he said I should be able to print if I just plugged the laptop into the printer, but I can't. And I wondered if you had any suggestions.
So your printer is not, it isn't printing wired or wirelessly.
Right.
Okay. You know, the printer may be defective. Does it print from another computer?
I haven't tried that.
Okay. I mean, you may just have a bad printer. It can't be as simple as that. Unfortunately, you don't, if you don't have another device to test it with, there's no way to know.
There should
for
be
sure.
an error log, though, right? If it's not getting signal, it would tell you that. If it's a hardware, it may not tell you that.
Yeah, not all the time, unfortunately. But I'm thinking that if you cannot print wired and wirelessly, then it's not a Wi-Fi problem. You may just have a bad printer.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Mary Jane. We appreciate the call. Over to Marcus and Troy. You're on.
Yes, how are you doing? Thank you for taking the call. You may have covered this already. I don't know about the XP system. That I have a home system, and my desktop was equipped with XP. And then when they stopped supporting it, I haven't used the desktop. I do whatever I'm going to do on the laptop. But is there some way that I can re-access my my desktop computer that I'm no longer able to connect with my provider? Is there something there that could help me?
You should still be able to connect it to your provider.
I can't bring in the internet
on your XP machine.
You're right.
You know, the official support ended with my on Windows XP machines, but that doesn't mean that you can't use the machine anymore. It's just that you won't get any updates.
And you really will. I mean, I used, truth be told, Marcus, I just got rid of my XP machine about a month ago.
Yeah.
And I was scared to death. I wouldn't do sensitive things on it, but they provided vital security updates. They will continue to do that. In fact, they're doing that still. They won't do any core operating system updates.
That's exactly right, yes.
And as long as your antivirus is up to date, I mean, I wouldn't make a habit of it, but it should still work.
Yeah, Marcus, so your problem, whatever problem you're having, is not because Microsoft discontinued the support for XP. Your XP should still run like it's always ran for you. So it's something else that's causing an issue. It's not because of the discontinued support from Microsoft.
Oh, okay. All right. Maybe I need to look into that. But I thought that maybe when they stopped their support, because it was soon after that that I when I would click, you know, like to bring up the internet, it would give me some message. I don't recall what it was right now, but it wouldn't bring in. You know, I could go do all my computer work that the stuff that was on the C drive. Right. So, but as far as accessing with my provider, I wasn't able to do so. And so I thought that was the effect of XP not working.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't be related to the XP discontinued support. It would be something else.
Yeah, but if you use it, though, make sure your antivirus and firewall and everything completely up to date and that you've done, there will be Windows updates for that. You haven't had it on in a while, so make sure you do all the security updates.
Okay. All right.
And I wouldn't use it for long, though. I would get out of there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
All right. Well.
Now, for an older system, what I don't know. Is there a recommended operating system to put on to replace that?
Yeah, Windows 7 is what we still recommend.
Windows 7, okay. Yes.
But if it's an older machine, it may not want to run Windows 7 too well.
To upgrade the old machine.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't try to upgrade the OS. I would purchase a new machine.
Yeah. Okay, well, good luck, Marcus. We appreciate it. Let's go over to Melanie in Buskirk, New York. Melanie.
Hello, Melanie.
Hi, my name is Melanie Mason. I have an older Dell computer on Windows 7. It's about 3 years old. Just put it in sleep mode, and now it won't wake up.
It's in sleep mode, and it won't wake up. Okay.
It seems like the switch is sort of perpetually stuck in. And I had taken it to Best Buy, and they said, oh, well, they don't make switches like that. They can't fix it. Otherwise, the computer works fine. I did replace the hard drive about a year ago. It works fine, except I can't get it to turn on now.
Power supply?
So it doesn't turn on at all.
No. So it's in sleep mode. What is it? The on-off switch has a light on it, and then there's one of the lights lit in the front, which is sleep mode light.
Okay.
When you go to turn it on, normally you would, I have it so that if I shut the cover and then open the cover, it'll turn on. It won't do that. Sometimes if you press the button it's supposed to turn on, it won't do that either.
Melanie, I will unplug the power cable from the back of your power supply, leave it off for about 5 seconds, and then before you plug it back in, push the power button about 5 times.
Ah.
And then plug the power cord back into the power supply, then try to turn it on again.
So you think it's a mechanical issue?
Well, actually, it's what we found in the past in these situations is something is clogged in the either the capacitor or the memory chip of the PC. And if you don't unplug the power supply, there is continuous power delivered to the PC.
Ah.
So to unplug it,
you open the circuit.
We'll kill the circuit, and then to push the button a couple of more times will dissipate all the electricity off the capacitor. So you get a 100% clean start. It's a very, very kind of non-common sense thing, but there are technical reasons behind it why you will want to unplug it and then push the power button a few times, because that would dissipate everything off the computer.
You got that, Melanie?
I got that. I'm going to go inside and try it right away.
Okay. You know, let's say one more thing. In keeping my old 11-year-old computer alive, at one point the power supply went, and it still had a little standby light on it, but it didn't have the juice to start up the whole thing. So if Tony's fix doesn't work, maybe it's the power supply.
It might very well be the power supply, yeah. But what I just described will probably be the first step that I would recommend you to do.
Okay.
In troubleshooting this.
Unplug the power supply. Wait about 5 seconds, 10 seconds, press the button 4 or 5 times, plug it back in, and then try the power button again.
You got it, Melanie.
Thanks, Melanie.
Okie dokie.
Bye now. Appreciate it. All right, let's quickly go to Amanda. Amanda, I'm sorry, you only have about 20 seconds, and then Tony has about the same amount of time to answer.
Okay. All right, I'll make this quick, guys. So I have about, I think it's a 2009 MacBook Pro, the hand-me-down from my husband. I let the kids use it, and I don't know what they did, but I got malware on the browser now. So you look up something on Google, and then it jumps to another random Google, looks like Google site, but I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
I just want to know, is there a website I can go to check out, if there's malware on there, or how do I get into system preferences or find out what needs to be deleted?
Okay. Yeah, you don't want to go to any of these adware remover sites, because they're the ones actually put the adware on your computer.
Exactly.
So I will use, I will get the latest virus software and scan it with your antivirus software.
Is there malware bytes that'll work on a MacBook?
Yeah, but there is no virus software for Macs. As far as I understand,
that's a great question. What about Malwarebytes? Is there any compatibility for a Mac?
I don't think Malwarebytes is available on a Mac.
Ah, okay.
Melanie, no, they're all antivirus softwares for Macs, just like any other.
Oh, there are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Just like any other software.
I thought you didn't need it. I thought all Macs.
No.
The operating system's closed.
Yeah, Macs can get infected just like any other PC. So
and we're out of time now.
Okay.
In the old days, right? The Macs wouldn't get infected because it was all the Mac users who made the viruses, right? Isn't that, no?
Well, they got a much smaller community, so.
I'm only kidding.
Yeah.
We love Mac users. All right, Tony Yang, great job. Support comes from NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. And Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga. InterimHealthcare.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy for being at the controls. Phones answered by Bruce Herbach, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. Thanks again to the great Tony Yang. You can find his contact info at our website, wamc.org/voxpop. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we'll talk cars with Gordon Fricke. Stay tuned now for a news update.